My Family Thinks I'm Crazy, a podcast where I, your host, try to give you some tips on how you can explain all this weird, wild, crazy conspiracy stuff to the people you love most. Because that's what I've been trying to do for the past 10 years with no success. I've been telling everybody that our government is shady, but every time I do, my family thinks I'm crazy. The hollow earth, UFOs, aliens invading, fluoride in the water, they spray our skies daily. When I talk about these things, they think I'm crazy. There's no escaping anymore the evil that we're facing. Illuminati mind control, they're sacrificing babies. The end of days, but anyways, my family thinks I'm crazy.
What, they don't want to listen to you?
No, they don't want to listen. They don't want to hear it. They're just like, oh, here we go, Mark. Off again with your
Mark being Mark again.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's the thing about podcasts is when you're on the air, and it's like therapy, you know. If I can't talk to my family about this stuff, I'll talk to you, Matt, and all our listeners.
You know, just tell your whole podcast.
Yeah. So who are we talking about today, Matt?
Took my brain out of my head and gave me a new brain. And I started seeing things for the way that they actually were. Everything just, like this cloud just vanished from my head, and I could see things clearly. And I said, of course they are. How could I have been so stupid? That's just, you know, that's not, they're a government and that's what they're gonna do. You know, why wouldn't they? What's stopping them? And so it just, after that, it just got worse. I started getting targeted directly. And they'd spray the house. And the thing about these chemicals was they were super volatile. Like, they could spray the outside of the house, and they're so volatile, they just beat their way inside into the room in the area that they sprayed, and, you know, really fast. But if they stopped spraying, the chemicals would disappear in a couple minutes. So they had to constantly spray. But I never could see where it was coming from. But it didn't seem like they were far away. They seemed close by. So I was getting hit with really large amounts, like high concentrations. But again, other people couldn't smell them. I feel like I'm trying to reach out and get this topic to go mainstream, but it's very difficult because it's almost like you're not allowed to talk about it. You know, as soon as you start saying something like this, people want to, you know, other people, they're conditioned to just say you're crazy. And that, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Why would the government go after you? But, you know, the way I see it, nothing the government does makes sense. You know, it's all, you know, like, I think this infrastructure is there to target people. And if it's there, they're going to use it. Government checks being written, keeping, you know, they want to keep this thing there. So if they need these people, it's like an army. If they need it, the army to go into action, it's there. So they need this infrastructure in place. And so you got to give them something to do. And, you know, at the minimum, you could say that what they're doing on me is just training. They're just training for the next guy that needs to be targeted. So it is something that our government does, and I think it's something that all governments do.
You just heard today's guest, targeted individual and activist who joins me, Mystic Mark, here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Thank you for tuning in, and enjoy this conversation with Ken from chemspray.weebly.com. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. I'm your host, Mystic Mark. And today I'm joined by a new friend whose website is chemspray.weebly.com. I highly recommend you go and give it a look. It's linked in the description. But we're going to be talking today with Ken. Ken, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. I have to ask, you know, from the get-go, like, what was your first experience that led you to get in what seems like a series of unfortunate relationship with the powers that be, groups of people who do not have, for the most part, our best interests in mind? But what happened? You have in the notes here something happened 16 years ago. So take us through that and tell us what's been going on.
Yeah, well, I have this strange condition called chemical sensitivity, where I can smell chemicals that other people can't, and they'll actually bother me. You know, I'll have symptoms, and you know, sometimes even neurological symptoms. And so, you know, I could be in a situation where I can smell something and it's bothering me, but other people around me can't. And so what happened was I was in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, and there's a Coast Guard base there locally. And I just started smelling these fumes outside. And it was really weird. I smelled them at the house, and they would just pop up like every 20 minutes or every half an hour. It would pop up and then go away. And then, you know, the next half hour, it'd pop up again, go away. And so I just thought it was strange, didn't know what was going on. And a few days later, I was driving around town, and I noticed the fumes were in other places around town and pretty widespread, covered a lot of the town, actually. And so it continued, and then it just got worse. The concentration would get worse. Nobody else seemed to smell it. And I noticed it was strongest near the Coast Guard base and the river. And so I'm not sure what they were doing. It seemed like they were doing some kind of chemical dumping. That's what I thought. And I complained to the EPA. And then like 3 days after I complained to the EPA, well, no, it wasn't 3 days. The EPA said they were going to inspect the area. And then a few days after that, I noticed it seemed like the chemicals were like following me. And, you know, I'd come home, get out of the car, and it seemed like the yard was just sprayed with chemicals. And they were just, you know, freshly sprayed, rising up from the ground. Just fumes everywhere. And I thought, what is going on? You know, are they targeting me? I said, no, that can't happen. This is America. That doesn't happen here. And so, you know, I just tried to put it out of my mind. And it happened again when I came home. The yard was just freshly sprayed, like somebody just sprayed it 2 minutes ago. And I just put it out of my mind again. Oh, it can't be. And then the third time it happened, and I said, oh, yeah, they're getting me. They're attacking me. And it was like the whole world just came crashing down around me. Look, my perception of the world just changed instantly. It's almost like I became a different person. It's almost like somebody took my brain out of my head and gave me a new brain. And I started seeing things for the way that they actually were. Everything just like this cloud just vanished from my head, and I could see things clearly. And I said, of course they are. How could I have been so stupid? That's just, you know, that's not their government. And that's what they're going to do. You know, why wouldn't they? What's stopping them? And so it just, after that, it just got worse. I started getting targeted directly, and they'd spray the house. And the thing about these chemicals was they were super volatile. Like they could spray the outside of the house, and they're so volatile, they just beat their way inside into the room. In the area that they sprayed, and you know, really fast. But if they stopped spraying, the chemicals would disappear in a couple of minutes, or maybe 5 to 3 minutes or so. So they had to constantly spray. But I never could see where it was coming from. But it didn't seem like they were far away. They seemed close by. So I was getting hit with really large amounts, like high concentrations. But again, other people couldn't smell them. Occasionally they could. Sometimes they get carried away and they'd spray too much, and then somebody could smell them, but generally they couldn't. And it just got stronger and stronger. And at night it would get really strong. It seemed like they would move up to the property line and spray from there, but you could never see them. And you know, there were neighbors there. Nobody ever saw them. And so that went on, and it got worse and worse. And I moved, and then I started living in apartments. And they started pumping the fumes through the walls. And I just didn't know how they were doing it. And then one time, and sometimes they would spray the roads when I drive. Like I'd get in the car to go somewhere, and they'd have cars in front of me spraying. And if I was going to take a long trip, they'd have cars on the highway spraying me. And then if I took a turn they weren't expecting, they'd have a car behind me come up past me and become the new car spraying.
Right.
And it was just insane. I couldn't understand why they would go to so much trouble.
There's an interesting graphic on your website that demonstrates this. And it seems like they would, essentially what you're describing is you'd be cut off by a vehicle, which would release some sort of noxious gas.
Right.
And again, speaking to the volatility of whatever this chemical is, I assume it would pass through your car the same way.
Yeah.
It would home, whether your windows were down or not, correct?
Right. The car would just be fuming. Yeah. Cause you're driving right over it. And sometimes I'd have to pull over and get out of the car and let it air out. But it just seemed insane. They would go to so much trouble. And one time I drove up to New York and they'd have about, it seemed like, you know, I didn't have people following me from North Carolina to New York. It's when I'd go into an area and cars would come out to meet me and they'd have chemicals and they would spray them. And I guess when they ran out of the chemicals, new cars would come out to meet me. So all the way to New York from North Carolina, I was constantly getting sprayed. It never stopped. You know, I'd get some relief if I made a random turn, but then they would just, you know, pass me really fast and then get ahead of me and they'd start spraying. And I could tell they were spraying because they'd fly right by me and then they'd start matching my speed. But even if they were like, they could be a mile ahead of me or even 2 miles and I would still get the fumes because they would last on the road for about 3 minutes. So they could still spray quite a ways away. There were times when I never saw the sprayer, but I was still getting the fumes. So what I started doing was when I was on the highway, I started going 45. You know, it's like, say the speed limit's 55 or 60, I would go 45. And that way I could pick out the people that were spraying me because they would pass me. Then they'd get about a mile or so ahead of me. And then they'd start matching my speed so I could pick them out. And it made it a little harder for them to do it. So that's what I would do. And then one time I was driving to Florida and a van pulled up right next to me, just came out of nowhere, right up next to me. We're going side by side. And he gave out this really rattling noise, like he tried to spray me, but there was air in his sprayer line. And it just went really loud. And so it didn't work. He tried to spray me, but it didn't work. So he took off. He just floored it and got out of there. And I had a neighbor one time later I was living in a house and I had a neighbor who was spraying me and he had that problem twice. I'd come out the door and he was trying to spray me and his sprayer would give out a really loud rattling noise. Like I'm taking like 3 steps out of the house and then it would stop. And that happened. And then he tried to do it like 2 days later, same thing. And then I was wondering, you know, like when I went to New York, you know, if I go anywhere, like for a few days or weeks or whatever, they'd have people up there attacking me. They'd have like a dozen people assigned to spray me with chemicals. And I was thinking, where are these people coming from? Like, what are these people doing or what were they doing before I got there, before they had me to attack? You know, what kind of skullduggery are they up to?
Yeah.
And then what do they go back to doing when I leave? You know, it just boggled my mind. I couldn't believe that. So it seems like they've got this secret army all across the United States and they can just call people up. Hey, we need you to do this. Right. And they just come out and do it.
Right.
So I'm wondering, what are they doing? You know, my guess is they're spying on people. They're going through people's things, checking up on people, see what they're doing. You know, they're probably listening to people's phone calls and say, oh, we better check this guy out. And so they need this invisible army to do these things. So I think that's where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, like a dozen people, that's kind of a lot.
Let me ask you, let me just for the audience's sake, who, you know, we're all learning these events for the first time, give us a sort of a window of time when these things started to occur. Was this the 90s, the 80s, recently, within the last 5 years? Like what time period did this begin? You said 16 years ago, right? So that would have been the early 2000s, around the time we were in
started,
war, right?
Start of 2009, like spring 2009.
So right around the Obama years, and we had all kinds of strange stuff going on with the government at that time. Yeah, very interesting. Okay, so that helps me kind of get a frame. And, you know, this is not that long ago, so it is a time where satellite GPS tracking is feasible technology, especially with the military. I mean, they might be leagues ahead of that type of technology, right? With their capabilities,
right.
How they
I couldn't understand. Like one time, it was nighttime and they were spraying our house, and I was in bed, but I had a security camera going, and actually, you could see this. I was trying to catch sprayers in the act, but I didn't. But instead, I caught the chemicals, and that's on my website. You can see the fumes that they were spraying at the house. And the funny thing is, like, I went out there and I couldn't see the chemicals. I couldn't see them. But when I went in, I had the camera hooked up to a TV screen. And when I went inside, the chemicals are raging. You know, they're out there spraying me. And it only takes me like 5 seconds or maybe less to go from that bedroom to the back door to look outside. And so I kept doing it. I'd run in, look at the screen, and the fumes are just raging on the camera. And then I run outside and I can't see anything. But this was nighttime and the camera was infrared. So for some reason, the fumes were showing up on an infrared camera. And what they were catching were these just tiny droplets. I mean, really, really tiny. And it was like a mist of them, and you could really see them blowing around. And that's what they were catching. But if I went outside, I couldn't see them. And you could see bugs flying through the droplets, and bugs don't seem to be fazed by it. It was really weird. And then there was another time. What's that?
Let me ask you just a question here, because you mentioned you've seen the sprayers when they're in the car, in vehicles on the roadway. Right. But there is a... It seems to be there's some sort of technology that allows them to be more undetectable, we'll say, when they're around your home and your property. Is that right? It seems like they're one step ahead of you almost, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to think they had some kind of nighttime invisibility. That's why they, you know, they seem to move in closer at night.
Right.
That's what I thought at the time. Well, they must have some kind of nighttime invisibility. And then I thought, oh, yeah, they're using satellites and they can tell when people are, you know, where they are in their homes, if they're looking out a window. So maybe they're just moving around. They can move around when they know no one else is looking. Maybe that's how they stay hidden. So I was just trying to come up with things. Yeah. And so anyway, I don't want to get ahead of myself. I kind of want to get into that gradually, because that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
So, well, they start. I was getting sprayed, and that went on for quite a few years till about, I don't know, maybe 2014, 2015. And then what happened was I drove up to New York to visit relatives, and I went through Washington, D.C. with my car. And I had this bumper sticker on my car that advertised my website, that had all this information about the spraying. And so when I got back, when I got back to North Carolina, I started getting microwaved. So some big shot must have seen my bumper sticker going through DC, and they had my torture upgraded from chemical attacks to microwave attacks. So then I started getting microwaved in my apartment, and sometimes the floor would shake, and I couldn't really feel it at first, but I noticed the vibrations. But then after a while, after maybe 3 weeks, I could feel the microwaves. I could feel the burning. And it was stronger at night. That seemed to be when they really want to get you, when you're sleeping. You know, they know you're not going to move, and they know where you are. It's kind of like you're on the operating table. You know, you're less likely to react. They got you. And that's when you get your worst attacks. So at the time, they were just kind of just generally microwaving my body. Just, I felt it in my joints, mostly knees, hands. I try to do something with my hands, and I would pop ligaments in my palms, and I could feel them popping. And then my hand would get really weak and it would take weeks to heal. But then the microwaving started to get more precise. They started to be able to microwave body parts, individual body parts, and mostly the brain. When they started doing that, the brain was their favorite thing to attack. And so I started wearing protective gear. Like I would put like metal webbing in my hats. I'd wear lead aprons and lead vests. I'd make blankets out of aluminum foil and duct tape. And I didn't know where it was coming from. You know, it seemed to be coming out of the walls and the floor. A lot of it was the floor and the ceiling. I don't know how they were doing it. But then, let's see. Yeah, it's hard to remember all this stuff.
Well, it sounds like what you're describing earlier with chemical sensitivity, it evolved into electromagnetic frequency weapon.
Yeah.
That now you're I imagine sensitive to that too. So let me ask you this, as far as your home furnishings go, are you relatively, I mean, we're communicating right now on a computer, so I assume you have electricity, but do you take any protocol to maybe like cover your Wi-Fi router and other things like that? Like I mean, I haven't had a microwave in years, but I remember as a kid having the microwave and making food in the microwave and always having like a strange ringing feeling like this is not normal.
Right. That, you know, strangely enough, things like Wi-Fi don't bother me.
Interesting.
Yeah, but, you know, I put foil on the ceilings where I sit and where I sleep.
Okay.
And, you know, I sleep on top of like metal, sheets of metal. And I have a lot of water bottles to absorb the radiation. And I got tons of stuff. Like when I go to sleep at night, it takes me almost an hour to get ready. All the protections I have to put on myself. And the thing they're doing right now that really bothers me is for a few years, they were just microwaving me with like, you know, just shooting rays through the air. And I would try to protect myself with some kind of metal or foil. But now they've upgraded it to, well, this started maybe 7 years ago. They started using nanobots on me. And these are small microscopic machines. And these particular ones, they make their own microwaves. So they could put them right on your skin. So it doesn't matter if I have a hat on that's shielding me. They can put this stuff right on my scalp and it'll penetrate. And it'll just shoot microwaves right into your brain. And it's very hard to combat. A lot of times I'll use wet paper towels. I use plastic wrap. Initially, I was using wet towels on my head. But then they switched to a nanobot that gets power from water. So the wet towels actually made it worse. So then I'd have to use like dry towels. Sometimes that would work. And plastic wrap to keep them from penetrating.
Well,
and magnets.
Let me ask you this. When you're going through this sort of trial and error, how are you identifying? Because like this seems like pretty novel discovery to come across that they're using water. I mean, I've heard rumors of things like water-powered engines. And obviously, we have hydroelectric dams. So it's not impossible. It's not inconceivable. But what makes you think that the nanobots are powered by water? Have you read something that leads you to believe this?
Or no, just the feeling. Possibly? Just I put the protection on with the wet towels, and it just got worse. Like if I leave the wet towels off, it's there, but it's not bad. You know, it's not terrible. I put the wet towels on, it just goes through the roof, and I have to yank them off. And then I could put dry towels on, and it's better. It's just the feeling. I don't know. It's like I said, these are microscopic machines. I guess they can somehow use the water as fuel. I don't know how they do it. But yeah. I swear they can do it. And
yeah,
sometimes
I think your observations are worth getting into. Yeah.
And initially I was using magnetism also to defeat them, like scramble their electrical impulses or whatever. But then there are times when even the magnets will make it worse. Like they'll use a nanobot that gets power from the magnet. So it's it's unbelievable what they can do. So anyway, before they started using nanobots on me, I was living in this apartment and they were putting chemicals in my food and in my vitamins, things like that. And I was hearing noises in the walls. And I came to realize that they had invisibility. There's no other way to explain it. I knew they were doing things to my food in my apartment. Like I would come home, I would buy the food, bring it home, put it in the fridge, and it would be tainted like in an hour or so. And I'd have drinks. I'd go get a drink. I'd start drinking it. And there were chemicals in the drink. And one time I went to the supermarket and I bought a bottle of water and I was drinking it in the parking lot and it was fine. While I was drinking, I drank half of it. It was fine. But halfway through, it had chemicals in it and there's nobody around me. So I realized that they had invisibility. And so what I did, and I knew they weren't, you know, I thought maybe they were coming in the apartment somehow. How are they getting in? But I had, the door was barricaded. There was no way they could be coming in the apartment. And I got a really big stick and I just went around the apartment, just waving it at the ceilings and poking it into the corners. I figured, well, maybe they're just floating around up there and I can't touch them. But no, I didn't hit anything. And so I realized that they were invisible and I can't touch them. And I said to myself, you know, that can't be possible. I haven't even heard a theory about that. You know, like everything seems to have at least have a theory. And I never even heard a theory about this. But it turns out there is a theory that explains this. And people don't talk about it. It's seldom talked about. And they actually, I think they just don't want you to know about it. They want you to keep it from you. But, I didn't know what to do. And then I didn't know about the theory. It took me years to figure out this theory or to become aware of it. But they were doing things like, you know, I would be sitting in the living room and I would hear this click go off. It sounded like either a thermostat clicking or like when you start up your propane grill, you know, something like that. Ting. So what I did was I had this big sheet of cardboard with foil on it and I put it where I heard the noise. I put that in the line of sight between me and the noise. And then it would happen somewhere else, you know, outside the cardboard. So I'd move it again and it would do it again. And one time I was on the couch and I was nodding off and I got this big like electric spark sound right between my eyes. It's like point blank, like somebody was right in front of my face and they made a big spark. And so it's like they are right there, right next to me. And then the nanobots, you know, they're putting nanobots on me all the time. I mean, that, how else can they do that if they aren't invisible and right next to me? So now, or at that time and now, nanobots are the primary method that they attack me with. But they still shoot things at me too. They still shoot guns.
Yeah.
Things like
now,
that.
Let me ask you this, because I imagine given the origin of this trial of yours, you know, this torture, as you called it, this began, you believe, based on a complaint you filed with the EPA. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
So tell me about that, because I imagine after that, you did not go to maybe a doctor or someone that the, you know, general public would think of as an authority that might be able to help you in this situation. I imagine, you know, given the circumstances you're in, there's not many people you can trust to help you with this kind of thing, right? So after this phone call with the EPA, like, did you have any interactions with anyone beyond the sprayers and these, you know, basically, you know, esoteric forces, these hidden forces that are, whether it's invisibility or microwaves, I mean, clearly something's going on here. But as far as like other human beings, have you had any interactions beyond that EPA phone call?
Not really. I mean, I sometimes tell my doctors about it because, you know, I have all these strange problems. I don't, you know, they microwave me and it makes me ill. So, like a lot of times, I go to them and I say, look, I'm having these symptoms, but I don't know if it's disease or microwaves. I'm having these pains. I don't know if there's something wrong with me or these are just attacks that I'm getting from the microwaves. I don't know. And usually they don't find anything wrong with me. They're really good at giving you problems that doctors can't find.
Well, and let me ask
And
you this, what is the general reaction when you confront the doctors or the medical staff with the your explanations for what's going on? Like, do they just dismiss the possibility that you're a victim to this stuff, or are they just trying to reassure you that you're okay? Like, what's their reaction?
I think they're trying to help me as much as they can. I think most of them believe me because I've got some pretty good stories to tell them, and I'm pretty convincing. So I think they do, I throw some of the science at them and all this stuff. And so, I kind of blow their minds a little bit with some of the theories I have. So I think overall they believe me and they're trying to help me, but there's only so much they can do. But one time I went to the ER because they were microwaving my chest really bad and it was messing up my heart. And I told the ER doctor that I was getting microwaved and they locked me up in a behavioral unit for like 5 days. Just like a, I guess they call it a, I don't know, they're watching you, just make sure you're okay.
Yeah, like a psych ward might not be the right term, but yeah, they take you to a place where there's psychiatric doctors and typically
And
people who,
and I think it was, and they asked me if I was going to hurt myself or anybody else, and I said no.
that's
And
typically
that
why
didn't
they would
seem
take
to,
you to a place like that, is to make sure you're not going to take your own life, and then also give
yeah,
you a
and I
bunch
said
of drugs
no.
that
And
you probably don't need to begin with, but yeah.
right. And in my opinion is they shouldn't have done it. And I told this to my psychologist that I see, and she was shocked. I can't believe they did that. But I think in the end, they're just after the money, the insurance money. And I read an article about that. And if you give them any reason to think that you might hurt yourself or anything like that, they're going to automatically do it. And I think it's just because they can get away with it, and the insurance money's good. I think at that time, this was like 8 years, 8 or 9 years ago, it was $10,000. Luckily I had insurance. Because my roommate at the time in there, he didn't have insurance. And he voluntarily went to them and said, I'm going to hurt myself. And they didn't want to let him in because he didn't have insurance. And so what he ended up doing was he went to the police and the police got him in. So yeah, I think it's just the insurance money they're after. But yeah, I think probably one of the important things to talk about is their invisibility and how it works.
Yeah, tell me more.
Yeah, and it's strange because maybe 10 years ago or so, or 12 years ago, I watched this documentary on invisibility, and they didn't go over the invisibility that I know the government has. They went over all this crude stuff, and I think the whole point of the show was just propaganda to show you that, oh, we're nowhere near any type of invisibility that could harm you, that they could use against you. So don't worry, we don't have anything like that. I think that was the whole point of the show.
Yeah, to create a false sense of security. Yeah,
Yeah,
I think that's a point.
propaganda, that's all it was. So I'm sorry, they're really attacking me hard. They're spraying my nose with nanobots and it's going into my brain, so I'm really struggling, but I'm going to do the best I can. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely.
But
Yeah, and
anyway,
like I said,
so.
at any point, if you need to take a break, grab a glass of water, be my guest. We can take a
Yeah.
break. It's totally fine.
But it just, you got to bear with me because it gets a little, it's just hard to think when they do this because they're hitting the brain and they got stuff going up my nose and they're doing my neck.
Now,
But
let me ask
anyway,
you this,
okay.
like when this is going on, like is it a sensation like that you feel in your nervous system, like you are experiencing the physical sensation of these nanobots flowing into your body essentially? Is that what you're describing?
Yeah, it's weird. Now what they do, they like to do, they put nanobots in my ears. And that way they can microwave my brain easier. And it's like I get this ringing, right? And it's like, it's not tinnitus, because they've done this to me and then they've stopped. And if they stop, it goes away. But they put this ringing like right inside my head. And you know, when you watch those science fiction movies and the people are being attacked with some sort of, I don't know, ultrasonic weapon, and they grab their heads, like, you know, they're like grimacing, like, ah! It's like that. It's like right in your head. Well, and if it gets really strong, it feels like it's fusing my brain. Like my brain is actually concentrating and shrinking.
Yeah.
And then I got to get up and do something.
This is what I was curious about. It's like, what do you think their ultimate goal is? Cause you describe feeling like you're on the operating table when you're going to bed. You feel like you're observing, essentially stalking happening around you with these vehicles and things going on.
Yeah, I don't know. I think part of it is I'm their project, right? They've made me their pet project, someone to go after. Maybe I'm their cash cow, you know, maybe I'm just somebody that they can milk everything that they want from me. And, you know, I'm like job security for them. You know, I think these programs, these targeting programs, probably got started maybe sort of legitimately to go after, like, you know, foreigners that are in the country that need to be watched. And then, you know, just like any government program, eventually they get expanded and they get abused and corrupted.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors. First and foremost, all the amazing people who sponsor the show on Patreon or Substack. Big thank you to all of you. If you'd like to join that group of amazing people, go to patreon.com. That's patreon.com/mftic, or myfamilythinksimcrazy.substack.com. Check us out there. You get more content, you get live streams, you get the video version of the show, all kinds of great stuff over there. All you gotta do is sign up, support the show. But we have our sponsors, a couple of great people that send money to this show to keep us afloat, Above Phone, making the highest quality decentralized phones, tablets, and laptops known to man. Go to abovephone.com, use the promo code CRAZY. We've got our good friends at brainsupreme.co helping you maintain your dream life with microdosing. Keep your edge, keep your balance, maintain homeostasis in the mental plane with a microdose. I love it. I use it. Sometimes I just randomly microdose and see how my day goes. And 10 out of 10 times I've done this, my day is freaking great and worth writing about, worth journaling about. So I recommend it for people who are comfortable with psilocybin. And if you're not, go to brainsupreme.co and learn. Learn, learn, learn. Adam Schell's been a guest on this show many times, and he's an expert. He's a trusted expert. So go and check out website brainsupreme.co, promo code CRAZY, and do yourself a favor. Microdose into your dream life. And then our last but never least sponsor is Vibe MedX. That's VIBEMEDX.com for the highest quality Shilajit in America. That's right, Ron. He has sourced the purest Shilajit from the Altai Mountains of Russia. And Shilajit is not something to dismiss, folks. This is the vitamin of the gods. This isn't some Tylenol, autism-inducing acetaminophen. No, this is the good stuff. Okay, you will not get the tism from this Shilajit. So go and check it out. Promo code CRAZY at checkout for all of our sponsors, and there are more sponsors listed in the show notes. So go and check them out as well. And we'll be right back to this episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast after a quick break to our dynamic ads. Remember, every episode is ad free when you sign up at patreon.com/MFTIC or My Family Thinks I'm Crazy. My Family Thinks I'm Crazy family. Let me tell you about my favorite, my personal favorite cannabis Mood, M-O-O-D, created in 2002 as an online source for 100% federally legal cannabis grown on small pesticide-free American farms. Listen, folks, this is the good stuff made in America. Their gummies are action-packed, okay? I've had all the gummies. None of them are the same. The Sleep Time gummies mixed with my Raw Optics red lenses, I'm in bed in 10 minutes. No hangover, no grogginess. I wake up like that. Whew. Jumping out of my bed, standing up straight, and taking on my day. It's incredible. Try it out today. Use the promo code CRAZY and you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with promo code CRAZY. Let's go, folks. Let's do it. All right. My family thinks I'm crazy. I'm in the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy mood. Hey, everybody. This is Mystic Mark, the host of My Family Thinks I'm Crazy. And I got to pay my bills. So here I am compromising my integrity to tell you about Hims. And listen, you don't have to compromise your routine with Hims. You don't have to take time out of your busy schedule. Just do it all online from the comfort of your home. What are you doing? You're getting treated for erectile dysfunction. Why do you have erectile dysfunction? I don't know. Maybe there are other issues in your life that you should address first before going straight to pharmaceuticals. But if you're there and you've tried everything else and you really just want to make your lady happy, which I'm a guy, I get it, man. We got to make the ladies happy. That's how the world goes around. When women are happy, the world keeps turning. So get that edge you need in the bedroom with Hims. Use the promo code CRAZY at checkout. That's hims.com/crazy for your free online visit. hims.com/crazy to get simple online access to personalized, affordable care for ED, hair loss, weight loss, and more. Visit hims.com/crazy. Here comes the fun part. Actual price will depend on product and subscription plan. Featured products include compounded drug products, which the FDA does not approve or verify for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. See website for details, restrictions, and important safety information. Doo-doo-doo. Thank you, Hims. Now I can go buy more weed and smoke it, stoner, dude. Just kidding. I'm literally paying my electric bill, my insurance bill. I'm dying over here. Support me on Patreon, patreon.com, for real, patreon.com/MFTIC.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Z.substack.com. We'll see you over there and we'll be right back in just a moment. Well, we know
in the 50s, they start doing things they weren't supposed to do.
Yeah, in the 50s, they had a whole excuse for spying on the public under the justification that, you know, there were potentially communists undercover posing as regular American families, but really they were, you know, this was the whole Red Scare. So yeah, absolutely. I think that was a justification for spying on the public, right? And then terrorism and activism and the blurry line between the two. has continuously been a, you know, source of basically scapegoats for these government programs. You know, they derail activists, turn them into criminals, whether they are
right. or not. They make enemies out of people that aren't enemies, out of ordinary citizens, so they can then pay yeah. themselves to go after them.
Well, and let me ask you this. I mean, this experiment that they're running on you, this project, as you call it, I mean, it can't be inexpensive. I mean, chemicals, what do you think this chemical could be that they have the funds? I mean, obviously the black budgets and the taxpayer money is endless at sometimes, but I wonder logistically, like they're able to get these sprayers continuously, almost like they have their own gas stations for this fluid. And I mean, I'm not trying to cast doubt on what you're saying, but just logistically, I'm wondering, you know, your process of like, how are you explaining this to yourself? Because I would imagine you must live near military bases if this is the kind of thing that you're being exposed to frequently, right? Because where else would they have the infrastructure to provide for these vehicles to be equipped with this, and then also to have the men or women, the agents, if you will, to go out and do the actual stalking? And you know, I mean, it seems like it would be logistically a lot to keep up with and probably cost them money, right? So I'm wondering, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it started out as a chemical dumping program. Like, instead of taking waste chemicals, and what they're supposed to do is they're supposed to burn them in a burn facility. And instead of doing that, and that can take a long time, you know, takes a while to burn these things. So instead of doing that, they've somehow made these chemicals super volatile, so they can just dump them in the rivers, spray them in the air, and they just evaporate. They just disintegrate on their own. So no burn facility needed. So I think it started out as a way to save money, you know, because they knew people couldn't really smell them. They had some way of masking the odor so that they knew people wouldn't smell it. So they felt like they were free to just spray these chemicals anywhere they wanted, and they would just disappear. And I think that's how it started, and that's how I first noticed them. Because I was thinking, these chemicals are so volatile, they only stick around for a few minutes, so what sort of purpose can they have? I mean, their only purpose is to disappear. So I said, well, that must be what they're doing. They're just making chemicals disappear.
Well, and I was thinking, you kind of inspired a thought that, you know, I've had a couple peers over the past few months, and someone close to me who, you know, and they're younger than me, and they have issues with their olfactory faculties. They're not great at smelling things. And I wonder, you know, are these kind of programs contributing to potentially the desensitization, pardon the mispronunciation there, of our senses? And someone like yourself, who I'm going to just assume that you're maybe a couple decades older than me, maybe you've been, you know, exposed less, since in the sense of like your birth, when you were born, there were less of these, you know, environmental factors going on. So you have a stronger sense of smell, hence your chemical sensitivity. But all that to ask you, what does the actual, like, what do these chemicals smell like? Like, is there a distinct smell or something similar that you can help our audience kind of wrap their head around what exactly you're experiencing? Like, does it have a similar odor or something it's reminiscent of?
No. When they started doing the dumping around town, there were six chemicals that they would cycle through. That's what I noticed. They would do one chemical for a few days and switch to another one, then switch to another one. And they're about six. And they would just repeat. But then when they started attacking me, I probably got over 100 different chemicals. It's like they were just trying things. Let's try this on them. Okay, let's try that. And they always seem to get stronger. But the thing is, especially with the first six, they're really like nothing you've ever smelled before. You know, they're very bizarre. They're not like any household chemical. They're very exotic. And you can't really say, oh, it smells like this or it smells like that. Some of them, occasionally, you know, if they spray enough, they spray enough chemicals on you, you're going to get some that smell like certain things. But I was in this one apartment, and I was on the second floor, and I had a lady above me. And she said, whenever I came home, she would start getting this weird smell in her apartment. Well, she was, yeah, in her apartment, but mainly she was out on her porch. She was sitting on her porch and she would start getting this weird smell. And it happened when I would come home and then I would open my slider. I would just crack it and she would get this weird smell. And, you know, it wasn't anything I was doing because I would come home and I guess they would start spraying the chemicals. They would start pumping them through the walls. And then I would crack the back door just to let them out. And so she was smelling them. She was outside and she was smelling these chemicals and they're probably going up through the wall and, you know, coming out of her door jamb on her porch. And I asked her, I said, well, what does it smell like? And she just had the most perplexed face. Like she didn't know, she couldn't say. She was just like, I don't know. Like I said, it's like nothing you've ever come across, most of these chemicals. But then there were chemicals that, oh, there was one that smelled like bleach. There's one that smells like burnt toast. And it's hard to,
well, and there was one interesting. You mentioned bleach and burnt toast because, you know, there are, I know, certain reactions that the body has to certain stressors in our environment or maybe things going on in the body physiologically that will provoke the sensation of smelling burnt toast or provoke the sensation of smelling bleach. And it's typically not associated with an actual source of burning toast or bleach. It's actually just the, you know, something going on in the brain where a receptor that is similar to the receptor that would receive that smell, yeah, give that, right?
Well, so the bleach, yeah, I understand. That, but the bleach one, my son was in the car with me and he smelled it.
And again, not, I'm simply thinking out loud and trying to work this out for the audience who, like me, is learning all of this from you for the first time. So, yeah, don't, never to, you know, second guess what my guest is talking about.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. But, and I've thought about that too. Oh, burnt toast. Doesn't that mean you're having a stroke? Right. That's what I've heard.
And this is where my question kind of is heading, is like, what do you think is potentially going on with these chemicals in with the actual, because you said earlier something that really stuck with me, which is you feel like your brain is almost being like concentrated or shrunk. And I mean, that can't be a pleasant sensation.
No. Yeah. That's the microwaves that'll do that to me.
But the chemicals is a different sensation.
Yeah. The chemicals, sometimes I'll get liver pain from the chemicals if they're really strong. Sometimes it'll go to my head. Yeah, it's hard to explain the chemicals.
Yeah.
And one time, more than one time, but they can put gas. This sounds very strange. People aren't going to want to believe this, but they put gas inside my windpipe. And so I would open my mouth and my mouth would be like the tailpipe of a car. Gas would just be billowing out of it. And that happened for like a minute and a half. And it was very hard to breathe because I'd have to forcefully exhale this gas they were putting in me and then take short breaths in. But that's sort of related to the invisibility thing. We really should get into that.
Please take us in whatever direction you want to go in, please.
Yeah. Okay. That's probably the most important thing. So I didn't know how they were doing this. And then I tweeted to Neil deGrasse Tyson. I said, how does the government's invisibility work? I know it's not light-based. You know, I know it's not created by bending light around the subject that you want to make invisible. I know that's not how they do it. So I didn't get a response, but somebody went to my website and maybe it was him, I don't know. But then maybe 6 weeks later or so, maybe 2 months, I saw a video on YouTube, like it just showed up, talking about fourth dimension invisibility. So apparently, if there were a fourth dimension, and I mean spatial dimension, I don't mean, you know, a lot of people say, oh, the fourth dimension is time, but time isn't a spatial dimension. Like we live in a 3D world and we have three dimensions, length, width, and height. A fourth spatial dimension would be another direction. And that's basically what dimension really means. It means direction, a direction of movement So it's an additional direction. And so if you could move in that new direction, it would take you out of 3D space. You would leave our 3D world and you would enter 4D world. And it's an area that exists outside the boundaries of our 3D world. So that's how I figured, oh, that must be how they're doing it. That must be how they're invisible. They're in the 4D world. And it's like they're a submarine. Like, pretend that our 3D world is like the surface of the ocean, right? It's flat. But just pretend that the whole 3D world is compressed into the flat 2D plane of the surface of the ocean. The 4D world would be like the ocean, and they could be like a submarine skimming just beneath the surface of our 3D world, and they could pop up wherever they want into our 3D world. They could even, it's like they share the same space. Like they can occupy the same space as you do, or anything. They could be in the ground. They can go through walls, because I couldn't touch them, right? They're invisible and I couldn't touch them. They have this untouchable invisibility. So if I can't touch them, then walls can't touch them. So they can go right through walls. And so there's a theory out there that does explain it. And every physicist knows this theory. I think it's called Abbott's Flatland Theory. And anyway, it's kind of hard to get into without pictures. But basically, it says if you can enter this 4D world, you could see everything. You have access to everything in the 3D world. You can pop up anywhere you want. It's like the 4D world is kind of superimposed on top of the 3D world. Like they sort of occupy the same space. So it's like this restricted area that they've somehow figured out how to get into, these government agents. And then I was thinking, why is there this restricted area? Why does the universe have an area that I can't get to? And I thought, well, everything does, right? Like, you know, a clock has gears or electronic components that are on the inside that protect it. Like, you're not supposed to go in there. Everything you need to do is on the outside. Like, you could read the time, you could set the time. You know, if it's mechanical, you can, you know, wind the watch or whatever, change the batteries. Everything you need to do is on the outside. And your body's the same way. Everything that makes your body work is on the inside. And you don't want to go messing around in there. You know, it's protected on the inside. And, you know, if you cut yourself open and start rooting around in there, you know, you could hurt yourself. So everything is like that. You know, your refrigerator, all the compressor and all those components are on the inside, and they close it up with a panel and then push it up against the wall. You know, they don't want you going in there. Everything you need to do is readily available. You know, you can open the door, get things out, put things in. So it seemed like everything is like that. So it made sense that the universe is like that as well. And then I was thinking, well, what is this inner working of our universe? What is it? What's this 4D world hiding and keeping away from us? And I thought, oh, well, it must be the fabric of space. It's that, I don't know. It's that thing that large objects like planets distort and create gravity. You know, without gravity, nothing would work. Not planets wouldn't be formed. You know, matter wouldn't coalesce to form planets and stars. So nothing, you know, it wouldn't support light. So you need gravity and you need the fabric of space. So then I had another idea. Another analogy that I was thinking of was that, you know, we live on the Earth, and the Earth is huge, right? It's massive. And the Earth has all these layers. The Earth has all these internal, all this internal structure. You know, it has the mantle, the outer core, the inner core. And the inner core, I guess, is molten metal, and it spins around and it creates some sort of magnetic field. And that's what protects the Earth from the sun's radiation, keeps us from getting just blasted by the sun. So we're just on the crust of the Earth. You know, we're just on the surface. So why does the Earth have to be so big? If we're just on the surface, all we use is the surface. We're barely using any of the Earth, maybe less than 1%. But the Earth has to be as big as it is to create the gravity and to have all that internal structure, the core, to create the magnetic field. If it didn't have any of that, we wouldn't be able to survive on it. So there's a lot more to the Earth than what we can see. And I was thinking, well, I guess the universe is the same way. There's more to the universe than we can see. The universe has an interior. And, you know, that make, and it's, the interior is far bigger than what we can see. And that's the fourth dimension. It just goes on and on. I don't know how far it goes, but it goes quite a ways. It's like, if you're like the submarine, you're like a submarine in the ocean in the fourth dimension. And the fourth dimension is the depth of that ocean. So, and then another thing I was thinking was, if you go out into outer space and there's nothing there, right? You're in outer space, there's nothing. It's complete vacuum, nothing's there. But then all of a sudden you put a planet there and you have gravity. As soon as you put that large planet there, it's going to change that space and create gravity. So if space can be changed by that large object, that means space must have characteristics or properties. So if space has empty space, has characteristics or properties, that makes it a thing. It's an object. And like I said before, all objects have inner workings. So that again, that says 3D space has an interior. And that's where these agents are hiding, inside the interior of 3D space. And this 3D space is, or the 4D space is filled with the fabric of space.
Yeah.
And that's like the ocean. And it's kind of like, you can think of the fabric of space, like it's like the ocean, and it holds us in the 3D world. Without that fabric of space, maybe we would fall into the 4D world. But that fabric is what keeps us up and holds us in the 3D world. And that's probably what happens when a black hole is created. You know, a black hole is a collapsing star. And when the star gets so dense, you know, it shrinks down to like a, you know, a very, very small object, but it still has the same weight. It still has the same mass, but it's super concentrated into a smaller object. And I guess that, you know, it's like a, the fabric of space is kind of like a trampoline or a mattress. You know, it gets overwhelmed by this pinpoint pressure that the black hole just pops through, goes through, and it goes into 4D space. And so it's not gone. Like, I think conventional science says it shrinks down to a single point. I don't think it does that at all. I think it's just hiding in the fourth dimension. Anyway, that's my theory.
Yeah, no, this is fascinating. And, you know, in terms of fourth dimension, third dimension, like, typically on the show when this has come up, we're referring to the fourth dimension in the sense of the astral plane, or even sometimes, depending on who we're talking to, where we go when we dream. I've tended to think that, at least based on things I've read in the past. But is there an aspect to this targeting that you're experiencing that goes into the dreams you experience at night? Like, do you have nightmares? Do you have pleasant dreams? Are you not remembering your dreams? What is that like? Because you mentioned earlier your sleep routine is pretty lengthy, but do you get a good night's sleep going through all this kind of stuff?
Yeah, not really. Yeah, sometimes it does seem like I get a lot of nightmares. Okay. And I think that's, you know, while they're torturing me while I'm sleeping, and a lot of times I'll just incorporate it into my dreams. And so that makes me have a lot of nightmares, more than my fair share. Sometimes it seems like that's all I have are nightmares. And then I usually get up in the middle of the night, you know, because the torture just becomes too much. And I have to get up and do some things and add more protection. And then I go back to bed, and it's always very difficult. And especially, you know, if my wife isn't in the room, it'll get even stronger. You know, they tone it down if somebody's in the room with me. But if she gets up and leaves, it'll get really bad.
Now,
so yeah.
Let me ask you this. Were you married when this occurred and began to happen to you 16 years ago or so? Or were you?
Yeah, I was married, but I wasn't. She was in a different state. She had a job that was kept her in a different state. And but eventually she quit that job and we got back together. But yeah, I was married. But she's been with me. She's been with me during this experience for, I don't know, maybe 8 years now. So she witnesses it. And I have a son. He also witnesses. But I had another son and he died. And I,
sorry to hear that.
I believe they killed him because he just got sick out of the blue. And he got a really, see, what they do is they give you problems that doctors can't find. And they seem to do that to him. He had this problem where if he ate food, it just messed up his brain. And eventually he took his own life because he just couldn't take it anymore. And it all happened in like the period of, in a period of 4 months. It was very fast. Came out of nowhere. And, you know, we were struggling. I would take him to the doctors. They couldn't figure out what was going on. And I think they killed him because he had a slight case of autism. So I kind of took care of him. You know, I took him to his job. I drove him around and things like that. And I think maybe it was harder for people to attack me because I took care of him. You know, it's like, oh, you know, we don't want to hurt him too much because he's got to take care of his son. So then I think they brought somebody in to get rid of him, to make him commit suicide. And so then after that, my attacks just went through the roof after he was gone. And it was weird because his condition would worsen on days when my attacks would worsen.
Yeah.
And they were also doing something to him. They have this method of sleep deprivation where it just feels like you drank 10 cups of coffee and you can't sleep and your chest is buzzing. Like it feels like you've got a hornet's nest in your chest. And they were doing that to him and me at the same time.
Can I ask you how your son, what was his experience? Did he view it the same way you do? Did you guys talk about this or did he have his own singular experience of this attack?
Well, he knew I was being attacked by the government. But when it happened to him, I mean, I was pretty sure that it was the government attacking him, but I just didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to upset him. And I think he knew that it was, but we just didn't talk about it. We were just kind of hoping that things would get better.
Before this, had you talked about this kind of thing with your family, including your son?
No, I didn't think they would go after my family, but I think that, you know, like I said, they just try to milk this for everything they can. And I think that's just part of the torture,
was,
you know, getting rid of him.
Was this something that your family knew you were going through, including your sons? And
oh, yeah. Yeah, they all knew it.
Okay.
They could. Yeah, because I would move frequently, almost every year, to new apartments. And they would recruit the neighbors to attack me. And you could hear it. There was this one attack they would do all the time where they get over my head and they stomp. And I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if it's some sort of electronic attack, but they would stomp. And so what I did was like, I have foil on the ceiling. And then when they stomp, they go around the foil. You know, they try to stomp where the foil isn't. And I don't know. I really don't know what it is, but it's some sort of attack. And every apartment I go to, they do it. And I would get stomping. I would even get thuds from my floor. Like the person below me would do something. And it would kind of feel like a bubble. I'd be sitting in the chair and it'd feel like this, like a bubble would be created on the floor and I would feel it come up through the chair. And then one time I was with my wife and, you know, we're just in the dining room and they were doing something below us. And she said, it sounds like kids are running on the ceiling. And she said, I know that's not possible. I know kids aren't running on the ceiling, but that's what it sounds like. And I go, yeah, I agree. And you could feel it and you could hear it. Yeah, it sounds like kids are running on the ceiling. I don't know. And then they have this one attack where it sounds like somebody's bowling and it's right over my head. And they have, it's carpet, but it sounds like somebody's bowling. And other people have heard it. And it's been in different apartments, not just one. So yeah, they know. And then sometimes when they're out with me, they smell the chemicals. So yeah, they know I'm being attacked. But yeah, I think they just want you to commit suicide. That's what they did to my son. I think that's what they want me to do. You know, they just make it hard for you. They make
is this something make that is. Have you expressed this feeling to your family that there's like suicidal ideation attached to these attacks? Or is this something that you just sort of experience internally?
I don't talk about it too much. If I do talk about it, I'll just talk about, you know, oh, I'm having problems with this today, or oh, the microwaves are really hard on me today, and you know, it was really strong, and oh, they're doing my back or whatever. I try not to get too much into it. And I think they think that if I talk too much about it, it just makes it worse. You know,
well, and I'm curious
they think that if you dwell on it.
Yeah. Well, and I wouldn't totally, I can't say I have the same standpoint as them, but I do agree with that in the sense that, you know, what you think about affects your reality. And I'm curious, you know, when it comes to these, like, essentially, you know, what you're experiencing, like, beyond the doctors that you've seen for various ailments you're experiencing, obviously a lot of these are, I'm going to assume based on what you told me, related to these attacks. But are there, you know, because this seems like it's out of the medical establishment's ability to diagnose, as you pointed out, like these are things that doctors can't find. So my question is, because you reached out to me, right? And I was very honored that you reached out to me to do the interview because I was curious to learn about your story. But aside from, you know, a crazy podcaster like me, have you sought out, you know, help from anybody at all? Like, I mean, obviously, like, who do you go to in a situation like this? But
yeah, that's, come up, that's like, a really good question. Yeah, I've racked my brain on that very question. And, you know, I think to myself, boy, I wish there was some sort of government microwave expert that I can talk to. And then I would think, oh, yeah, it's me. You know, I probably know more about this than anybody else. And, you know, it's kind of depressing when you think about it like that. But yeah, there really is nobody. I mean, I've scoured the internet and I can't find anybody that's really going through it at the same level that I'm going through it.
Well, this is part of the podcast's silver lining, in my opinion. I mean, obviously what you're going through is not great at all. And I, you know, it's not, I mean, a lot of times on this podcast, we're talking about things that are generally optimistic, but this is something that's concerning, you know? And I would say at the very least, if you are the guy, and maybe, and this just is maybe something that's crossed your mind before, but maybe you're the guy to help people, because I can't imagine you're the only person going through this, right? Like, have you spoken to anyone else who have similar experiences or symptoms?
Not really. I know one person contacted me through email. They found my website through a search. And, you know, you can't really do that anymore. The censorship has gotten so bad that you can't really. My website is almost unsearchable through a search engine. But she said she searched, you know, her symptoms and my website came up and she said, that's what I'm going through. But I don't know. I didn't carry it any further. You know, it's hard. There are a lot of people that say they're being attacked and maybe they are, but it's, you know, it's hard to separate the wheat from the chaff. You know, what I try to do is I try to, you know, I don't want to, like a lot of people tell me, oh, there's this support group over here and, you know, there's a lot of members and they're going through the same thing. But I try to want to reach mainstream people, you know, people who aren't going through this. I'm trying to get people, you know, it it doesn't really seem to do any good, I think, to contact people that are already being attacked and just have everybody just, oh, yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. Me too. I want to reach people and make other people aware that have no idea that this is going on. And you know, it's a real struggle because a lot of people don't want to admit this.
Come up a couple times on the show, and relatively, yeah, I mean, it's something that I believe I've met one person in my life who had some things to say that reminded me of what we're talking about now, but they were in such a, you know, fragile state of mind, and I didn't have the podcast back then, but they were in such a fractured or fragile, traumatized state of mind that, you know, I wasn't sure what to make of what they were saying. But Ken, honestly, you're very well spoken. Like, to your point earlier, you have some really sound theories about what's going on here. So yeah, I mean, that's the main reason I'm encouraging you to maybe look towards talking to other people. But I totally get your point of not wanting to just go and beat a dead horse, so to speak, at a support group. Right. Where everyone's complaining about, you know, going through the same thing. I mean, in a different sense, I've had guests on the show criticize AA for that reason, because some people say that when you go to AA or NA to become sober, it keeps you stuck in this mindset of being an addict. Even though you are sober, you still think like an addict. And it's this whole, you know, some people, I know a lot of people have been helped by AA, so I'm not necessarily casting aspersions against the organization itself, but there are people who have gone through it and described it as a cult. There are other people who have gone through it and it's helped them tremendously. So, but it does seem like a support group might not be the ideal solution for a problem this complex, right? And especially when you're dealing with people who are being targeted. I mean, you don't want to necessarily get grouped up together and say, hey, we're all over here at once.
It's like shooting fish in a barrel. That's what I was thinking too. But, and also, you know, when you're like this, when you're being targeted, you just don't know who to trust. You know, you're afraid to go out there and make contacts, you know, because even if you make a contact and they're just an ordinary Joe, they could get recruited. You just don't know. It's so easy for them to recruit people. I've always had people around me get recruited. If I, you know, whether I was living in a house or an apartment, it didn't matter. I've never been in a place where my neighbors weren't recruited. And usually two of them will get recruited. And then when I move out, like 2 weeks before I leave, and a lot of times those people won't even have jobs. They'll just stay home all day. It's like, how are you earning money? What are you doing? But then when 2 weeks before I leave, they somehow magically get a full-time job. And, you know, I'm sure it's a government job. Like the lady below me, she's got a federal job, I'm pretty sure, because she gets the holidays off, you know, Columbus Day. There's another one, can't remember, but it, you know, it's one of those days where you have to work at a bank or the federal government to get it off. So I think she got recruited. And, you know, these people, like when they get recruited, they're my neighbors, but they won't even look at me. You know, if we're walking by, you know, to the car or whatever, coming back from the car, they won't even look at me. Some of them, they just look down like they're really ashamed of themselves. But yeah, you know, I don't feel like these support groups are the place to be. I feel like I'm trying to reach out and get this topic to go mainstream, but it's very difficult because it's almost like you're not allowed to talk about it. You know, as soon as you start saying something like this, people want to, you know, other people, they're conditioned to just say you're crazy. And that, you know, it doesn't make any sense. You know, why would the government go after you? But, you know, the way I see it, nothing the government does makes sense. You know, it's all, you know, like I think this infrastructure is there to target people. And if it's there, they're going to use it. And, you know, people, it's all about just people getting paid. You know, government checks being written. Keeping, you know, they want to keep this thing there. So if they need these people, it's like an army. If they need it, the army to go into action, it's there. So they need this infrastructure in place. And so you got to give them something to do. And, you know, at the minimum, you could say that what they're doing on me is just training. They're just training for the next guy that needs to to be targeted. So it is something that our government does, and I think it's something that all governments do. You know, I think it's something that's natural for a government to do. And like I said, there's no oversight. And they have the technology where they just can't get caught. You know, they're invisible. They can walk through walls. They can do anything. So you can't catch them. So there's really nothing stopping them. And another thing, you know, I was thinking if I try to tell people, and this has happened, I try to tell people about the fourth dimension. Oh, there's a fourth dimension. They'll say, oh, but I heard the fourth dimension's time. And it's like, I think maybe that's why they say the fourth dimension is time. So if anybody like me comes around and tries to tell you that there's a fourth spatial dimension, they'll say, oh no, I heard this famous scientist say, and I just saw a documentary on it, the fourth dimension is time. So that's, you know, it's like they've created a period at the end of a sentence. Like, you've got your three dimensions and the fourth is time, and that's it. You know, don't even think about anything else. You know, we've heard this from the experts, so don't even bother. But anyway, it's strange. That's
really a fascinating way to look at that. And I get the sense that the structure of reality mathematically would follow that, where maybe the first dimension would be the origin, the source of all everything, the, you know, macro megacosm universe on the largest scale. And then within that, you know, you have its division into two parts, which creates life, right? All life aside from certain, I guess, phyla would be, for the most part, asymmetrical beings. You know, there are asymmetrical beings, but for the most part, there's a symmetry in nature. And that dualism, you know, at least metaphysically speaking, is like that stage of creation, right? Life, you have children, your wife and yourself created them as two. And then you have the third dimension, which is where we are. And the fourth dimension, this smaller, almost like to the power of the fourth, to the power of the fifth, right? Where it just keeps getting more kaleidoscoped, more fractured or fractioned into smaller and smaller parts, and maybe a multiverse, if you will. But yeah, I mean, with all the, you know, vivid lore in science fiction, there's plenty to keep people's imagination stirring. And I imagine when you start talking about this kind of stuff, people might just chalk it up to that. Do you think there's any part of like today's media that lulls people away from taking the kinds of things you're going through seriously because they start to think you're talking about things you've heard in movies?
Yeah, I don't know. I think people are conditioned, and you know, the media does it all the time, and you hear it constantly. You know, if you think outside the norm or outside the mainstream, you're a conspiracy theorist, which means you're crazy. And I think they try to, you know, hammer in that mindset, you know, and so that they don't even want you going down that path, you know, don't even try, just stay away from it. Cause a lot of people, you know, I've got this website and I can tell a lot of people, they'll go to it and they won't even look at, you know, they won't even scroll or read anything. They'll see what it's about and they'll just click off. It's almost like, you know, they don't want to catch something. Like, they're afraid that it'll poison their mind if they start thinking about these things. And, you know, it's the thing is my story, it goes so far against the norm that it's just hard for people to accept. Nobody wants to believe, because you think about it, okay, the government's got invisible agents that can just fly right through the walls of your home, start microwaving you, going through your things and reading your mind. That's another thing they can do. They can read your mind easily. You know, nobody wants to think that they live in that world, because that is so far removed from what the world that they've been told that exists. You know, people like to think they're free and that their vote counts. You know, they can go vote on certain things and for certain people. and they, you know, they can make a difference. But nobody, I mean, I often wonder what would people do, like if my story were to be accepted, or if it does come out that, okay, the government's got interdimensional invisibility and they can do whatever they want to you. What would really happen? Would people just head for the hills? You know, would people quit work and just, you know, leave society? I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. And, you know,
I feel like I've done that with this podcast. You know, I sort of realize everything was crazy where I worked previously as a Amazon delivery driver. You know, I didn't exactly have a role in society that was, you know, very impressive, but I realized like, oh, this is a rat race. I don't want to be a part of this. I can work for myself. So in many ways, yeah, I do feel that sort of what you just sort of joked about. But yeah, I mean, it is stunning and really scary to contemplate that these sorts of things are possible. And you're making a great point. I think most people would rather just be fooled or be ignorant to the truth and be maybe more comfortable for it. But also, awareness is powerful. And I mean, why not know about these things that could potentially harm you so you can protect yourself? So that kind of leads me to one of my, I guess, maybe a final question. And I'd love to have you back on in the future to talk about anything else. If we left anything out or you feel like there's more to get into, you're more than welcome to. But before we go, in case there are people listening who are going through this, you described some of them with your use of metals and foil and this sort of thing, but what are some of the most effective ways you've learned to defend yourself from the chemicals, from the microwaves, and from the nanobots? I mean, if you were to give somebody like just some basic advice or protocols to follow to defend themselves, what would you tell them?
Oh boy. Yeah. You know, I learned as I went. You know, they introduced new attacks on me, and then I would just, you know, add things to my repertoire, different coverings and whatnot. You know, I it's kind of like piecemeal, you know what I mean? They didn't give me everything at once. They built it up gradually. So I just added things one at a time. Yeah, just, you know, be aware of what they're doing. Sometimes you just have to sit there and really think about the attack. Because sometimes, like when they're attacking my brain, I don't know where it's coming from. It's just like, it just hurts. But if I sit there and think about it, I say, okay, they're hitting me on this side of my head, or they're doing this or that. And I'll figure out a way to protect myself. Because sometimes I don't know if it's a gun or if it's nanobots, but you just have to pay attention. Yeah, just try to keep your wits about you. Don't go crazy. You know, that's not going to help. Just work on it a little bit at a time. Do what you can. And what I really do is I just try anything, see what happens. Sometimes you learn, you put something, you know, you find a type of covering that works better than others. Like I use these gel hats that are pretty good. I would recommend that, actually. That's probably something people don't know anything about. You can go online on Amazon and get these hats and coverings that are made out of like a gel material that you can refrigerate. And sometimes I do that, like for my genitals, they'll hit those pretty hard and I'll have to put ice packs on them. So I keep these little gel packs in the freezer just for that purpose. One thing they just did to me, this was about 3 months ago. I was sitting in a chair and I felt this like pop in the back of my neck. And it felt like, I don't know, it was like right in my spine, just below my brain. And it felt like somebody taking their thumb and just crushing a tube or something. And I felt it go, and immediately after that, I got dizzy and I got lethargic and like, I don't know, dopey. I couldn't, you know, I had trouble thinking. I didn't feel alive. And I went to the ER and I was dizzy. And I went to the ER the next day and they did a CT scan checking for blood flow. And they said everything was okay. But then when I came home, I noticed when I shook my head, it didn't feel like I had the fluid up there that I should have. You know, my head felt lighter and I just didn't have the blood pressure or the fluid amount in my brain. And so I Googled it And it said I could have had a brain fluid leak. And it said to drink caffeine. Caffeine can help it. And I was like, because I was avoiding caffeine. Because I thought, well, you know, I don't know what's wrong with me. I better stay away from any caffeine. But I drank caffeine and it did work. But you know, I try to go to doctors and they say, oh no, no, you don't have that. That can't happen. You're okay. But I've got an MRI coming up, but still, I don't know if they're gonna catch it. Like I said, they're really good at giving you problems that nobody can find. But anyway, I'm drinking caffeine like twice a day now just to keep going. But just try things, Google things. Yeah, just don't give up because that's what they want you to do. They want you to give up. They want you to go crazy. They want you, probably want you to go, you know, get a rifle and head up to a clock tower. That's probably what they want you to do. And some people have done that.
Yeah, and that's the thing is the world is getting scarier and scarier by the day. And that's why, you know, my concern with this show is to try to understand what people are going through with an open mind. You know, that's part of why the title of the show resonates with so many people. And, you know, I'm so grateful that you reached out to me so you can share your experience with us. And I commend you for your bravery. I probably won't use your last name in the title of the episode unless it's like a pseudonym that you're comfortable with. You can tell me that off the air and we'll just leave it at that for now. But just, yeah, Ken, it's been great to have you here to talk about this. And I do hope that all of this subsides somehow, some way, and you find some peace and respite from the trauma you're going through and the torture, as you put it. I mean, torture is never, I mean, a great word to describe anything. I mean, even if it's intense. So I again, my heart goes out to you. I wish you the best in your future endeavors, and I do hope that you find some peace from this. But again, chemspray.weebly.com is your website where people can go to fully understand what's going on and maybe understand what could be happening to them. I mean, potentially this is something that other people are inflicted by. And yeah, I appreciate you
at least the information. Learn what they're up against.
Yeah. Well, and that's really, I think what, again, looking for a silver lining here, that's the least we can do. So.
Right. Even if you don't think you're being attacked, you're still up against the same forces that I'm up against.
Right.
And even if you're not aware of it.
Well, and again, like you're a particularly sensitive person, and this is like, you know, in a way you're like the canary in the coal mine, right? As the old phrase goes, maybe 10, 15 years from now, this will be an accepted and normal thing that people acknowledge happens, and hopefully we'll find some justice as well to whoever's perpetrating it. I mean, that again is the point of any good activist, is to find some justice or awareness and bring dark and criminal activities into the light. So I hope we could have done some of that today. And Ken, again, thank you for joining me and everybody tuning in. I appreciate you listening to this episode and following us here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Until next episode, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now. Wow, folks, what to say? That conversation honestly was tough. That was a tough one for me. Ken is clearly convinced that this is going on around him. I obviously don't have the information, the evidence to say otherwise. But there's just something about the way Ken described what he was going through that made me think it could possibly be self-induced. Psychologically, or just with the pattern of thinking that began 16 years ago till now. I hope that's the case, because it's very scary and terrible to think that, you know, all this poor guy did was complain about some fumes to the EPA. And the next thing you know, he's harassed and targeted for upwards of two decades. So, yeah, I mean, again, it's hard to take everything Ken is saying as 100% verified real fact. He definitely has a convincing way about him, but I also wonder if he isn't convincing himself when he tells people about all this stuff. Is he retelling the story of the life he doesn't want to live? And again, Ken, if you're listening to this, please don't take this the wrong way, but we have to be able to critically think about these things. And oftentimes, and I'm not saying this is the case with Ken, but oftentimes it feels to me like targeted individuals are not seeking help, the help that they could need, they could use, because they feel like there are people out to get them. And I, you know, hey, what do I know? Maybe Ken's right. But I would like to assume we live in a world where there are professionals who help people that are not corrupted and that are not in league with evil people or some network of doctors that run projects on people and then gaslight them into thinking that they're not actually sick. I mean, that kind of scenario is almost like what Ken was describing, where his doctors and the medical professionals that he is seeing are gaslighting him into saying, you know, yo, you're just fine, don't worry. And I'm sure they deal with or treat patients who have hypochondriac tendencies, so they have to, I guess, over time be able to tell the difference between somebody who might be, you know, letting their imagination get the best of them, or someone who's really suffering from an ailment. You know, the mind is a very powerful thing, and you know, as we've talked about on this show in the past, you can placebo affect yourself into a different life. And unfortunately, I think targeted individuals are an example of people who manifest more bad for themselves, even if, you know, what they're experiencing was a figment of their imagination. At some point, it becomes real and it becomes their reality. And as an interviewer, what am I going to do? Say to Ken, like, hey, are you sure they're spraying gas at you? I mean, could it just be the exhaust from these vehicles that you're driving behind, you know? Or are all of these cars equipped with gas sprayers? All of these cars are constantly at a full tank of chem gas so that whenever Ken gets on the road, they're there to spray him. I mean, logistically, that seems like a nightmare to manage. But again, it's not my position to judge Ken. It's not my position to tell Ken he's wrong or tell him what he's experiencing isn't actually happening. I think it might be. And as a matter of fact, it is, because Ken is experiencing it. But I guess the question that I'm walking away with from this conversation is, how much of what Ken is experiencing, it's caused by Ken? So with that, my heart goes out to his son who took his own life, and my heart goes out to his family who obviously cares a lot about him, otherwise he wouldn't be able to podcast with us. I mean, yeah, he'd probably be homeless, but he's got his life together and he's got a family, and I wish him the best. And if he listens to my little retort here, don't take it the wrong way, Ken, but this is my podcast and I have the right to tell my audience what I think about the people I have on my show. So with that, folks, I love you all. If you feel like you're targeted, it's never hopeless, and there's always somebody to help you. Even if you feel like no, there's no one out there, hey, you're listening to this podcast, right? So I'll help you. There's at least one person who will help you, and that's me. So reach out to me if you need that. mfticpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to talk to anybody, no matter what you're going through. Maybe I can be helpful. Maybe I could just lend an ear. But either way, Ken, chemspray.weebly.com if you want to learn more from Ken. And until next episode, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now.